You're listening to Wake Up Tucson. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, welcome back to the Wake Up Tucson show, 10:30 The Voice, local news and talk. People have been asking me when's the next happy hour. And I think what's going to happen is the October 7th thing is not going to happen right now. Things just gotten crazy. So October 29th is the next one that's going to be at K Bonita over on Tanque Verde. So save the date, 5:30. K Bonita and our new coming on soon advertising partner, Nature Spa, are going to do a joint operation over at Carmen's beautiful place. So please block it off. October 29th, 5:30. Till about 7:30. So we're going to continue our award-winning discussion. It's called Mike and Chris versus the Establishment. Michael Beatrice calling in from the great state of Texas, as we say in the Thor Ragnarok movie. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I just got back from a nice week with some cool weather in Michigan, and the weather finally broke here in Dallas, so it's good.
Weather is just about breaking here. I can see in the low temperatures. Today, first day of fall, going to be a chilly 98 here in Tucson, we're getting there.
That's just brutal.
This is what happens when you're a desert idiot like us. When you start seeing low temperatures in the 60s, then you go, now we're talking. Now,
and that's how it is in Texas, too.
Once we see 60s, we are okay. All right, give us the state of the Rona, Michael Beatrice, in the United States of America. What's shaking?
Well, hospitalizations are down a little bit. They're hovering around a little over 90,000, but that's down a little bit from when you and I last spoke a couple weeks ago.
Is that 90,000 total or 90,000 Rona?
That's 90,000 Rona. And then there was a study that came out. David Zweig, I don't know if you know who that is.
I've heard the name.
David's done some freelance writing for The New Yorker and Wired and The Atlantic, among others. He's really good. I actually have connected with him through this whole journey. He was on Megyn Kelly's podcast recently. So he broke a story, did some analysis, and some primary research of his own, and uncovered that roughly half of the hospitalizations that are coded as COVID are not actually COVID. They might be testing positive, but they're not actually in for that. And so what happens with that, Chris, is that when those people, should they pass away, forget that they become cases. That's kind of a meaningless number with the amount of testing that we're doing.
Right.
But those kind of inflate the COVID-19 death counts. But it has been interesting. In the last 2 weeks, there's been a major reshuffling in the rankings of COVID deaths per million by state. Mississippi took over number one. It looked like no one would take over New Jersey and New York in the one and two spots. And so the Southeast states in the top 10, Mississippi, Alabama, Louisiana, Florida, and then Georgia's 13th. So the Southeast states have certainly gotten a summer wave that's receding now. But big shakeup. One thing that's interesting, back in December, North and South Dakota were ranked, I think, either 2 and 4 or 3 and 4 in the country in deaths per million. And North Dakota has slipped all the way down to 24, and South Dakota was 3. They're now ranked 11. So that's all kind of interesting data.
When I look at the Pima County where we are, there has been it's been whatever's been going on. Again, cases, I hate cases. On their 7-day rolling average, cases have been dropping since August, and there's been a pretty steep decline in the last few weeks.
I think what'll be very interesting, I talked to some doctors up in when I was up in Michigan, and what will be interesting to see is what happens in the Northeast and the Upper Midwest this winter, because you're going to see some kind of waning of the vaccine efficacy, at least with the RNA vaccines. And so a combination of that with seasonality, it'll be very interesting to see what happens up north.
So we keep talking about, again, that lockdowns were not the answer. right? And that's what we've come to an agreement now over the last 18 months, that doing lockdowns for everybody was not the answer?
Certainly a one-size-fits-all type of mitigation tactic. Well, I mean, there was no documentation prior to COVID, Chris. When you look at the playbooks by the CDC and by the WHO, they never recommended universal or unilateral lockdowns, nor universal masking. They both said things were, you know, not really practical. They sure didn't recommend, you know, closing schools for as long as we have. So I'd say you're right, but your statement was right before COVID.
So what fool changed what group of fools changed that from after we spent millions of dollars on playbooking this and learning from other pandemics? Who should we blame for who changed the mindset that we need to be universally locking down everybody?
It's a great question, because it caught its own momentum in March, and it was probably some combination of Wuhan locking down, that's a huge city. It's the largest non-coastal city in China. It's bigger than New York City. Wuhan locking down, and then that combination with Italy getting ravaged. What nobody really paid a lot of attention to was when northern Italy got ravaged in March of 2020, it was largely nursing homes. The average age of death was about 80. And so no one just really, and to this day, they don't do a good job of studying the age stratification of COVID-19 deaths. You know, people are saying now it's a pandemic of the unvaccinated. COVID-19 is a pandemic of the elderly and the overweight. And if you took those two segments of the population out of the COVID-19 hospitalizations and deaths, we wouldn't know COVID was a thing, Chris. And that's not minimizing the impact to those individuals. What it does is sort of contextualize the one-size-fits-all type of lockdown measures.
What's amazing, right, is that everything's vaccine now, right? So just we're talking about the overweight, right? Why isn't there PSAs that, you know, out there playing all over the place, and these government officials out there going, man, if you got a BMI of 20 or 30 plus, you got a real problem with this COVID thing. Why can't they just come out and say that?
Yeah, I don't know if it's a fat shaming thing. I don't know. But, you know, I've got friends that, I've got one in particular. Well, no, I've got two. One, because one got hospitalized. He actually got COVID. The only actual friend of mine, and almost everybody I know got COVID. But he ended up hospitalized, and I've got another friend who's vaccine hesitant, and he's carrying a little extra weight. He's 56, and I told him that he should get vaxxed, and he's resistant. And so instead of focusing on, you know, are we going to get elementary kids, you know,
so
vaccinated,
crazy,
or college kids, there really should be a shouting of the rooftops, because what you'll see a lot of is you'll see a lot of news clips that come across the internet now. And it'll be like such and such person died. They were ready to get the vaccine and they didn't, and they had no underlying conditions. And then you see a photograph of the person and they were severely overweight. That is an underlying condition.
Correct.
COVID-19 is a cardiovascular disease at its core. And when you are overweight, you're compromised there. And so there should be a shouting of the rooftops from the rooftops that if you're overweight, forget the healthy 12-year-olds, you know, if you're overweight, probably at any age, but certainly from, you know, your teens on, you should get vaccinated. It looks like the efficacy of Pfizer is watering down, and there's a lot of speculation now among the people that I'm connected with that the Janssen vaccine might end up the best.
When we come back, I want to talk about this new CDC about the health of children after the lockdown. I don't know if you saw this or not, but after we just talked about out-of-control BMIs, we're going to talk about how the school boards and government officials just made this. Again, they did make it worse. So we'll talk about that when we come back with Michael Beatrice. If you have a question or comment, call us, 790-2040. You're on the Wake Up Tucson Show, 10:30 The Voice, local news and talk. Look at that, little Willie. Hey, welcome back to the Wake Up Tucson Show. We got our good friend Michael Beatrice on the line. COVID-19 lockdowns on trial. And what's the name of the new one? One more time, Mike?
The science versus the lockdowns.
And we Will that get released by end of the year?
Yeah, we're really close. I'm hoping to tie the whole thing off in 2 weeks. It could be out. It'll be out in probably 6 to 8.
Okay, awesome. Let's talk about this story about the and this is dedicated to all our school board members who locked down their schools. According to the CDC, on a cohort of 432,000 young people,
right,
they talked about how their body mass index, which we've just been talking about, makes you more susceptible to the Rona, has doubled since lockdown. That is insane.
It is insane, and that wasn't the first study. There's been other studies that have been out in MedRx and in the JAMA Network, and they kind of came to those same conclusions. I can tell you, Chris, as far back when I wrote the first edition of the Lockdowns on Trial book, I called out a big section. You have the book of obesity.
Yeah.
So you figure, and my point in that is that we had high awareness of that all the way back then. When I was interviewing some doctors for the second book, there's a doctor, a pediatrician named Kristen Walsh up in Jersey, very smart, very reasonable on this stuff. And she was the one that highlighted to me the high increase in both mental health and an increase in child obesity, or child, you know, basically inactivity. So you've got a combination of inactivity. And when you're locked down, there was a lot of sort of packaged foods that were eaten. So you've got probably less healthy eating habits and a lot less activity. And so we're sort of perpetuating this. And with her, based on her background, she shared that when you put on a decent amount of weight, it can take, on average, 3 years to shed that, if you shed it at all. And so we're in a circle right now, right? This is a circular thing where we're locking down, we're prompting more weight gain, which makes you higher risk for COVID and for anything else. And so what's really frustrating is, I don't know if you've seen some of these things that have been called out by, like, Monica Gandhi on Twitter, who's, you know, a significant policy influencer on this. But she's been making, and other people have been making comparisons to, well, look at Denmark now. Denmark's got a 75% vaccination rate, completely vaxxed, and they're opening up and their deaths per million are really low. I mean, it's so insane, right? Denmark would be like comparing, you know, Maine or something, you know, a small populated,
right,
sort of peninsula type of state versus states. And by the way, their obesity rate is about half of ours.
Absolutely. According to the CDC, when they talked about between March and December of 2020, they said that people of higher than 30 BMI or higher made up half of all corona hospital admissions, and people between 25 and 30 on BMI made up 28.3. So we're really saying that 78% of corona hospital admissions last year were people of a BMI of 25 or higher. Does that sound right to you?
It not just sounds right data-wise, it sounds right from what I've talked to, from the people I've talked to in ERs. So when I polled these different doctors in several different cities and asked them questions without leading them, and I'd asked them for certain characteristics of what they saw, and I didn't want to, like, prompt this by telling them, did you see a lot of people that were overweight? I would just ask them and keep asking them questions and leading them to give me a specific answer. And then finally it would come out, oh, you know what I noticed? Everybody was overweight. And so, again, if you took the overweight people and the elderly out of the mix, we probably wouldn't know COVID was a thing. That doesn't mean COVID wouldn't have impacted things, but it wouldn't have been the grand scale where we would have noticed it being much different than the flu. And, again, I'm not minimizing it for those individuals. What I'm doing is just trying to put this in some context of the whole population risk.
Well, and then also the things that you put in place to try to mitigate the damage, and we didn't focus on, especially if we did the Cuomo way, seniors and the very obese.
Yeah, I mean, the real flaw, if there was one thing I'm most angry about in terms of the science with the messaging of Dr. Fauci and the CDC, is they should really be highlighting the risk of obesity. And for some reason, you know, if smokers were comprising, 78% of the COVID hospitalizations, that would be shouted from the rooftops. For some reason, overweight isn't.
Well, let's take a quick call. And this is a good question. I think it should be a good question. We're going to go to hard break, and then you might have to answer it when we come back, okay? So let's go to Jeff on line two. Jeff, you're on with Michael Beatrice. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. This is a little bit of a vague question, but I'd like to ask if and why not there's any kind of a statistic in the other direction on COVID. And what I'm talking about, everything's focused on the number of cases, number of deaths, so on and so forth. There's 330 million people in this country. Millions and millions of those people did not get COVID yet, I don't think. Is there any way, when they do testing, can they say, oh, wow, you had COVID and now it's gone, you seem perfectly fine. Did you know you were sick? In other words, why aren't these people getting sick? If this disease is so rampant, it should be a lot worse than it is. I heard the statistics. There's this quote by Mark Twain. A quote by Mark Twain that there's three kinds of lies: lies, damn lies, and statistics. And boy, that's the truth. Last night on the news, they said COVID has passed the Spanish flu as the deadliest disease in the history of the country. Blah blah blah. And they gave the number 676,000 deaths due to COVID. Spanish flu was 675,000. Okay, fine. The population of America at that time was about a billion, 1918, a little over a billion. Now it's 7.5 billion. So statistically, COVID is not even close to being the deadliest disease.
All right, Jeff. So we're running out of time. So the question is, when we come back for Michael, is why are people not getting it, right?
Yeah, exactly. Is there some invisible antibody out there that the people that don't get sick have? How come they don't have it?
All right, we'll do that when we come back. Jeff, thanks for the call. 790-2040. You're on the Wake Up Tucson show. Hey, you're on the Wake Up Tucson show, a first day of fall playlist with Notorious ESQ on the other side of the glass. Welcome back to our friend Michael Beatrice, COVID-19 lockdowns on trial. Michael, welcome back, sir.
Thank you.
So Jeff just gave us a question in the end about, why aren't people getting it? That we knew there was a natural immunity. We already talked about this last year. I forgot her name. I know you guys have talked. The stats lady from Washington University in St. Louis.
Right.
Who did that early work on natural immunity on the Teddy Roosevelt and the Diamond Princess.
Right.
So where are we at in relation to, I know the government wants to keep selling vaccines on everybody, but let's talk about the natural, and also one more thing. Instagram has now banned the hashtag natural immunity. You can't do that anymore either. So I'm not making that up. So where are we at in relation to the people who did not get, haven't gotten a corona for various reasons? What have we learned out there about that?
Well, first, I want to thank Jeff for his call. And whenever we get these callers and on other shows too, I'm so amazed at the grasp that everybody's got of this. Right, that there's so many millions of people that I feel have a really, really solid understanding of kind of what's going on. The first question he asked, though, real quick, was about the Spanish flu. So in today's numbers, the Spanish flu for COVID to be equivalent to the Spanish flu, it would be in the 2 million range. And so since we know that about a third of the actual of the coded COVID-19 deaths are really not from COVID, that number is probably in the 400,000 range. So we're a long ways from the impact of the Spanish flu. And so one of the big reasons is the age stratification for COVID is like a hockey stick, right? It's got the sharp bend for the elderly. Like 80% of the people, I don't know the exact number, I'd have to look it up, but it's around like 75 to 80% of the people are over 65 or upper 60s to 70. What was different about the Spanish flu was it had a W type of curve, meaning it spiked up high for people under five, kids 0 to 5, then it dropped, and then it spiked up sharply for healthy people aged 20 to 40. It's largely credited for ending World War I. And then it drops back down, and then it went back up for the elderly. So So the age stratification and risk is very, very different than COVID. And also our treatments are just simply way advanced 100 years later. Okay, so that's the Spanish flu comment that he had.
Right.
So we've got two things on the natural immunity. Some people are just simply immune to this, and they've got what's called T-cell immunity. And so one reason that people think there's some studies that have suggested, and we don't know this, by the way, but there's been a couple medical studies. The largest one I saw was in The Lancet. If you look at Japan and South Korea, they have very lean populations. Their obesity rate is like, you know, 4 or 5%. But there's also a feeling that there's a natural immunity from countries in the Far East, just due to having lived there and being around coronaviruses, bat viruses. And so they haven't been very infected, even though they've had high case rates. So that's the first thing. So even within America, there could be a, we don't know what that number is. It could be 20, 30, 40%, but it's a decent number of people that are just simply immune to SARS-CoV-2. The other thing is, if you're healthy, you're just not that affected. Again, like I said earlier, if you're not elderly and you're not overweight, we probably there wouldn't be enough measurable deaths to qualify for anything other than a bad flu season. And that isn't minimizing how lethal COVID-19 is to people that are compromised. That's real. And so when you look at some of the overstated death counts around COVID-19, even in America, you can see how many people, meaning the people that have tested positive for SARS-CoV-2 or COVID-19, but haven't gotten sick or died from something else. It's we don't know exactly why, but being healthy and being young is certainly, like, I don't know, how many people do you know that have gotten COVID, Chris?
It's a handful or less.
Okay, so I might know 50, right? Almost every single college kid, I've got a kid in college, almost every kid I know in my son's touched, they've all gotten COVID over the last year, including my son. As far as adults go, probably 75% of my friends have gotten COVID, and only one of them got seriously ill. I did lose a family member in a care facility in Michigan to COVID, but only one of my friends has gotten seriously ill, and he was overweight. Everybody else that got it either didn't know they had it or were mildly symptomatic, meaning they felt fatigued, and they would have only known they got COVID because they lost their senses, their taste and smell, for somewhere between a day and a week.
790-2040 is the phone number. Let's go to Rick on line 3. Rick, you're on with Michael Beatrice. What's up, sir?
Hi. I've heard, I don't know if this could be confirmed or any information, I've heard that O blood type gives you some immunity. So I have O positive, but speaking with somebody else, they had told me that had COVID, they said it's O negative that might help prevent give you some natural immunity to COVID. Can you speak to that?
You know, I've heard that before, but I haven't seen a conclusive study. You could argue if there's data that correlates to that, it should be released or it should be studied. But I haven't seen a study that takes all the COVID-19 hospitalizations or deaths by blood type. That would be an interesting study to look at, but I haven't seen that. But I have heard what you're talking about more anecdotally.
Rick, thanks.
I have one other question.
Sure.
I've gotten several texts, and it says there's COVID. You can get a COVID shot here, and it says make sure you bring your ID. So my concern is that we know that people of color are not able typically to get IDs. Black people aren't able to get IDs. They can't get driver's license. So is that maybe affecting the number of people of color because they have to have an ID to get a COVID shot, but they just can't get one? They can't get one to vote. They can't get one to – so is there a correlation there?
I can't tell if you're being sarcastic in that tone or not in that question, because they would they would have IDs for everything else. You really can't function without an ID. I've talked to a number of people of color, more on the black race than Hispanics, but it does seem there's significant vaccine hesitancy in the black community. And it dates back a long ways. And the people that I've talked to, including some in Detroit last week, a couple of my mom's neighbors, I was asking them the question. And they just shrugged their shoulders and said, you know, we just don't trust it. And it's a very perplexing thing.
So, well, thank you very much.
Thanks, Rick, for the call. I appreciate it. Hey, one last thing for you, Mike, before I let you go on with your day. In the end, to me, the politics, the politicization of this public health crisis is one of the worst things that really happened to this, because I've never seen a public health crisis response so dripping in politics. How do we ever unwind that? Can we? Or we're just stuck with it?
Well, I think we're stuck with it for a while. I mean, I'm not an expert on climate change, for an example. I might have some predispositions, but I'm no expert on that. But because of this, I've become more skeptical about questioning spoon-fed data or conclusions that are brought. And I think that's probably true for, you know, you take Jeff, who called earlier. That's probably true for a guy like him too, right? I mean, you might have gone with the flow on a lot of things, and because this is so obviously politicized and we're not following actual data in the science, it probably is going to give your average citizen questions on and skepticism on lots of policies. The good thing about that is maybe people will, including me, will start researching data points on their own versus taking the medicine. But no, I think this is very damaging long term. I think it'll be years for confidence in both the science and the CDC and government policy to have a high approval rating.
And then you take the coupling of that with crushing of other science or studies or opinions on how to deal with this just gets silenced and crushed out there. Where usually in the scientific world, when people are doing other studies that challenge your stuff, it all then you respond to that, and then you try to, that usually makes the science better, but we're crushing the science that doesn't agree with the narrative. I mean, this is a really dangerous place to be.
Nothing's more, let's say that you can debate the efficacy of masks, right? They're not really effective, but they probably have something. I don't know what that number is. But, you know, I saw Jay Bhattacharya did an interview, and he was hypothesizing 10 to 15%. There could be some little benefit of that. Well, let's just say you can debate that. You can't debate natural immunity. That is irrefutable. The durability of recovering from a prior infection is better than the vaccines. That is just data proven at this point. And to not recognize that, it's almost like saying, hey, we're going to, like, talk about the weather, but by the way, the sky, which there's not a cloud in the sky here in Dallas now, the sky isn't really blue, it's sort of overcast. Okay, well, that's just, it's like you've lost all credibility on anything else you're going to say. Natural immunity is a real thing. Not acknowledging that, like other countries have, is it's a very reckless thing.
That's my thing, right? If you take natural immunity that people already had that haven't gotten this thing, plus the people who have gotten, who have developed the antibody, right? I mean, what percentage of America is that? It's got to be more than half.
Well, you know, no one knows this. And one of the flaws in this, and I wrote about this last year, too, back in May, was we should be doing widespread sampling, random sampling, not who goes in, but and we're doing all these other government things. This could be an intrusion, but so what? So is everything else that's going on. We should be doing random sampling in pockets of the country to find out what they call a seroprevalence, the number of people that have gotten us. But it's got to be a couple hundred million, 150 to 200 million. It just has to be. And so you've got a huge chunk of the population between that and the number of people that have been vaccinated. If the vaccines work, this thing really should be over. So we'll just have to keep studying the data.
Michael Beatrice, we appreciate the facts and logic, and a lot of people enjoy when you come on, so I appreciate it, sir.
Thanks. It was great. Great visit.
Have a good day, sir. We'll see you soon.
You too.
All right. It's Michael Beatrice, COVID-19 Lockdowns on Trial, new book coming out hopefully by end of November, hopefully. So we got Josh Jacobson. A lot of pressure on Josh when he comes back. No, we're going to, again, a lucky wishbone, of course, but also he has a masochistic tendencies to stalk meetings at the Pima County Board of Supervisors and report what he learned. And then, so we'll learn from young Josh when he come back. Wake up, Tucson. 10:30 The Voice. We're doing the first day of autumn. You guys gave us some good suggestions. A little four freshmen, a little chill here on the Wake Up Tucson show. Let's go right to Josh Jacobson at the Lucky Wishbone desk. Good morning, Joshua.
Good morning, Mr. DeSimone.
People tell me that you presenting your you're presenting these good kids from the community at the football games.
The Lucky Wishbone Community Kid.
Community Kid. That was the high point of the U of A NAU game. So congratulations for providing. Hold on, let me. Hold on, I'm gonna give myself a the high point of the football game. So thank you for doing that.
Well, it definitely is for us. We really enjoy the program, and it's been a lot of fun so far.
No, it's been fun, and it's better than what went on that day. So it sounds like you. It just seems like it's got good vibes, this whole program. So congratulations.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's a great way for us to give back to the community and recognize kids that are doing amazing things. And the most difficult part has been getting all of these applications or these rather nominations in and having to go through and choose because we're seeing so many really great kids.
Now, I want to get into your report on the county doings. But I have a question for you. I think about it when I promote that you're coming on, right? And I said, this young man, you know, successful company, doing your thing, moving and grooving. You have this masochistic tendency, not just to watch Pima County board meetings, but be involved in certain things and you know that have to do with policy and things in this town. Why a man like yourself, upwardly mobile, wonderful fiance and child moving on in your life, why do you do this to yourself? Why is this important to you?
You know, there's sometimes that I ask myself the same thing,
right?
You know, there's sometimes where, you know, I'll start daydreaming about a rural piece of property somewhere. But you know,
building the biggest Lucky Wishbone in Pine Top.
Or just having like a small little, you know, a fryer underneath of a palapa at Rocky Point at some time sounds really nice.
How do we say Lucky Wishbone in Spanish?
El hueso suerte. Yo hablo español, no sabía.
So I'm telling you, this is the dream, right? So yes. You have the chicken palapa place, right, in Rocky Point. And then you got one in Pine Top.
That is exactly correct.
And you wave to your parents on the way in between.
You know, and even to simplify it, I've thought about just building a trailer and being kind of like a fried chicken carny that travels from, you know, spot to spot. I'll homeschool my kid and, you know, that could be life. But, you know, realistically, you know, I've been on the board of the Arizona Restaurant Association for many, many years. And COVID has really shown that our local government and policies really, really affect our lives. So for many years, I've been advocating, you know, at the federal level and the state level with the ARA. Now I think that there's a calling for people like me to get involved and to pay more attention about what's going on here in Tucson if we really want to move the needle. Because the fact of the matter is that we could pick up and go to Pine Top or wherever else, but you're going to be dealing with the same stuff there. So Tucson's an amazing place.
No, you're not.
And well, the same but different, you know. So Tucson being an amazing place and my home for many, many years, we might as well, you know, be involved here, right?
Sure. All right. Like
that's why you've been doing it for all these years.
Hold on. Let me give Josh a little.
Hey.
All right. I think Higgins once said it one time when we were doing a Rotary thing, right? We're speaking to the Tucson Rotary. And someone asked that question, like, why do you guys subject yourself to this stuff? And he said that Chris and I were part of that mentality that if we walk across the parking lot, not a parking lot we own, but there's garbage on the ground,
yep,
we're the two idiots that are bending over and picking up and throwing it out.
Absolutely. And your kids should see you doing that.
And that's why we do what we do.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's why you do what you do.
Yeah. I can tell you, the Board of Supervisors meetings is absolutely amazing.
What a psycho.
There are some other things I'd rather be doing.
All right. When we come back, we're going to get a visit from Steve Farley, I think, from the Southern Arizona Humane Society. And then, we're going to start off with, Steve Christie, keeping it real, as we like to say,
mm-hmm.
asking Dr. Garcia about natural immunity and having that. And then also asking, why are we trying to force mandates on employees? But as we're driving around migrants from all over Central America, why don't we care if they're vaxxed or not? So we'll have that with young Joshua when we come back. So you're on the Wake Up Tucson show, 10:30 The Voice, local news and talk.